The Rundown,
Part 5,
A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Streetlights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
Far Lost, Planet Casti, geostationary orbit over Loglaw Sky City. Now. The clouds parted and Loglaw appeared, just a few clicks distant. Nick took Willer down through bucking winds that greeted the ship with far rougher than the usual love tap. He feasted his eyes. Loglaw, a city made for giants, with wings, and tails, and fangs. A beautiful metropolis of towers and mountains and skyscrapers with grassy fields on top for things to land on. He'd seen a lot in Far Lost. Nick had spent time traveling between worlds, between asteroids, between run-ins with the guard, but Loglaw always took the cake for him. Nick loved this city. He gunned the engines to line Willer up for landing. Just below was the pier. Nick took in all the damage, proudly enshrined, where the pier used to be a road, where it used to connect to the other cities. Sure, it had been decades since the Civil War, but the city remembered those days, bore the scars proudly, just as its people did. Loglaw was proud of the pier, and the new existence that came out of the Civil War that had been ignited with missiles severing every road, every city. The pier had been rebuilt twice since the war, but other than making sure the twisted metal and buckled plating at the very tip of the pier was secured safely, no effort had been made to fix that damage. For thousands of years, Casti had been connected to the four other cities by the sky roads, massive umbilicals of tubes, maglev trains, and data links. Like everything else in Far Lost, they'd been here for as long as anyone living could remember. Dragons had built the cities, back when there were dragons. Loglaw was older than the Jesus books, but for most of that time, nobody had the science to prove it wasn't suicide to cut a sky road, so no one risked trying. For all that time, the cities were controlled by the Tears, the caste system of aliens the dragons had enshrined to serve them before their end. Five rivaling dragon clans, five dragon cities. The cities had been designed to ensure that all of them would fall out of the sky, if any one of them did. That was the only way the clans would spend centuries of effort building the cities. Sure, dragons could live in space, fight and kill, even thrive in space, but they couldn't breed in space, and the proud giants hated hiding their young in hollowed-out asteroids. With an ironclad guarantee, no one clan could wipe out the nesting homes of all the others. And with enslaved workforces, controlled by the Tears, the five cities were born. So the cities had enjoyed thousands of years of safety, under a paranoid quilt of mutually assured dragon destruction. Until humans decimated the dragons, and figured out they could take down the sky roads without taking down the cities. And without the sky roads, and communication between the cities, it would be easier to pacify the populations. For destroying the dragons was only the start of the guard's plan. The system guard. The guard wiped out the dragons, and then infiltrated the Tears left in control of the cities. With the dragons gone, every city had exploded in civil war against the brutal Tears, or against the guard directly. In the end, only one city was annexed by the guard, down in Casti's southern hemisphere. Nick had forgotten its original name, if he'd ever known it, but now it went by Haven SG. In the end, the other three cities, Obel, Braha, and Sur, had banded together to resist the SG. They'd even rebuilt the sky roads, once the guard became too busy elsewhere to resume hostilities. And that was the benefit of sharing an atmosphere, even a giant planet's atmosphere like Casti. If you didn't win the war the first time, you didn't want to piss off the neighbors so much that they nuked you to get you out of their face. Nick shook his head. It didn't bear thinking about a nuclear war amongst his neighbors. Even if one of them thought they could somehow survive irradiating their atmosphere, no one had ever risked bringing down the cities in the first place, and the last decades had proven even the guard wasn't that crazy. Nick hoped. Willer's drive rumbled through Nick's ears and bones as the ship fought powerful winds from Cassidy's upper atmosphere, jockeying for a good position to land on the pier. Cassidy Control had assured Nick the winds weren't too high to land. Sure felt like more than a summer's breeze to him, though. He had the ancient control stick up from the floor again, and he was lining up the pier through the cockpit windows.
"They got machines for this, you know," Pesh gurgled.
Nick knew, but he liked to keep sharp. It almost couldn't happen anymore, now Cassidy shielded all wireless communications except for encrypted tight beams, but his father had told him stories from the war about the other cities hacking ships, turning fighters into prison cells that drove their pilots right on over to rival cities, or worse, sent pilots that tried to regain control of their ships plummeting toward the surface of Cassidy. His father had fought in the Civil War and loved to recount the time he'd fought his own ship for manual control, all the while dropping like a stone toward Cassidy's surface. Spaceships were built to keep pressures inside, not outside, like mining ships, and Tennyson Usher had spent terrifying minutes frantically biting through insulation on wires to restore manual flight control, all the while hearing the tremendous pressures building outside the ship's hull, popping, booming. Ten could hold a room silent as he recounted his ship's fall toward the surface of Cassidy far below, its pressures growing like an enormous fist, eagerly waiting to crush him. His father had seen to it that Nick could fly a plane manually, even before he was old enough to register his voice pattern with the city to unlock a flight training sim. The wind buffeted Willer again, and its whine competed with the ship's drives in Nick's ear. Nick smiled. What a different trip coming back down it had been than going up to collect their prisoner. Other than the wind and the drives, the cockpit was virtually silent on this return leg. Neither Pesh nor himself felt particularly chatty with a mass murderer locked in the cage at the back of the cockpit. Nick flashed a look at the hollow he'd pinned in the air over his right hand, and there was Roland Byrd, his hands tight around his flight harness on the other side of the glass wall of the secure prisoner compartment at the back of the cockpit. He wasn't white-knuckling his grip on the harness, though, and his face wasn't pinched or pale. He was calm, smiling. This was a man used to rough travels. Nick spared another look after lining Willer up for another pass at the pier. The smile didn't sit right with Nick. Cool operator or no, Roland Byrd was hours away from the not-so-tender mercies of the system guard, but he looked cool as a Skanan's carapace.
"Could you land already?"
Pesh groused from his own acceleration couch. Nick resisted the urge to meet his partner's eyes. He knew if he did, he'd bust a gut and he'd have to put up with a grouchy partner for the rest of the day. The Manta had strapped himself in, something he only did in the roughest of landings, because he felt ridiculous strapped to an acceleration couch. He looked ridiculous, too. Nick worked hard to keep the smile off his face, fighting the thought that with half his ballast sacks emptied so his safety harness could fit securely, Pesh looked like a raisin with wings. A powerful downdraft sent Willer plummeting toward the metal pier. "Whee!" Roland Byrd called out with a grin from his cell.
"Go again, cop. That was fun."
"Yeah, that's right. Enjoy yourself," Pesh taunted the convict. "You've only got one more ride left after this, don't you? I hear the system guard gonna live stream boiling your thorn-cold bones, aren't they?"
Byrd chuckled, shrugging the shoulders of his Locklaw issue prisoner orange jumpsuit.
"Sure, they're gonna try."
That chuckle set off a fresh alarm bell in Nick's guts. He looked at Pesh, saw Pesh looking back at him with a couple narrowed, suspicious eyes of his own. Nick focused on his driving. He suddenly wanted down twice as bad. There was a burst of chatter on the comms line, but Nick couldn't make it out. He wrote it off as bleed from another beam Control was using to guide another ship, and felt sorry for anyone else trying to land a bird in this wind. The chatter came back, louder, and Nick knew something was wrong. A massive shape rose up from below the far side of the pier, heading straight for them.
Nick pulled up. Control, this is Willer declaring emergency. Unknown ship crossing my path. Control, I repeat. The big ship wobbled. No, it intentionally listed. A glint on the side, above and behind one of the several wings on the large ship, an ore hauler or a gas tanker, drew Nick's gaze closer. A man-sized shape in the doorway, sparks of light from something mounted by the door. Nick yanked on the stick, instinctively turning away. A millisecond later, slugs shattered the cockpit window. Cold painted Nick's spine as the stick went dead in his hands. The engine wailed, the superstructure shivered, and then the world shook itself apart as Willer fell towards the pier. The ship was out of control. The stick was dead in Nick's hand. If they hit the pier at this speed, Willer would either explode on impact or skid right over the edge and fall until the pressure of Casty's atmosphere crushed them like a can. Nick was almost hoping for an explosion.
You have been listening to The Rundown, a far lost story, written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com. If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.